Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey guys, it's Candace.
And it's Elena.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. Why do I sound
Why
even
are you
worse?
Whispering?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still gross, but you know, sexy, gross. I don't know. Who knows? How are you, Lena?
Oh, peach keen.
Peachy keen. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, peach cobbler. I just thought of that.
Did you have some recently?
No, but like I want some now.
Okay, call Daniel right now.
Do we have any business to discuss? At the top of the hour.
Business.
Hey, if you're going to send us a story, will you please send it to our email? Because I know that there were more stories. I've been collecting them, but I know there were more.
We so bad want to do these feel good stories. And
yeah.
We've gotten a few.
A few through the email, but I know that we've gotten some like through DMs, Facebook Messenger.
Yeah. If you've sent them through Instagram or Facebook, just please maybe resend them
to the email,
which is
cousinsoncrime@gmail.com.
But yeah, if you haven't sent stories, please send us some feel good stories because we really want to share.
Yes, we do. And it's a nice little insert into the darkness.
Yeah.
So. All right. Well, I guess if that's all the business we have, I'll just get right into my story.
Let's go.
So the case I have to tell you about today has remained a mystery for over 40 years, kind of like last week where they're just, you kind of feel like your hands are tied.
Yeah.
There's just nothing more that could be done. And actually, I remember seeing this case featured on Unsolved Mysteries when I was a kid, and I was horrified.
Oh,
you'll see why. So today I want to tell you about the disappearance of David Box.
I don't remember this one.
Okay. So located 20 miles outside of Cincinnati is Fernald, Ohio. Today you can visit the beautiful Fernald Nature Preserve, take a self-guided tour through the Beaver Dam, which you might like to do, Lena. Or you could host your next company meeting in their spectacular green building.
Okay.
But where the Fernald Nature Preserve stands today used to be home to a place called the Feed Materials Production Center, which was a huge employer in the area back in the 1950s through the late 1980s. The production plant operated under the National Lead of Ohio, or NLO, and was owned by the Department of Energy. But that wasn't really common knowledge to everyone.
Oh, okay.
If you go to their website, the Nature Preserve website, it'll tell you all about their plant that they used to have back in the day with this spin on it that they've decided, you know, when they shut down the plant, they decided to change their mission to environmental remediation. But that's not really how it all started. So there's a water tower in the heart of the town that bore the plant's red and white checkered logo. So most people who lived in the town, drove by, thought the plant was making dog food because it just had a similar logo to the Purina brand dog food that's big here in the U.S. Some in the community perhaps drove by and didn't really give it another thought. You know, how many times do we drive by things like I'm sure we never really knew what the grain towers were in Saginaw until we were older and understood what it was. But it's just like a feature of your town. But the less interested in what the plant was actually manufacturing, the better. Because the NLO was processing uranium for nuclear weapons at the Feed Production Center. That wasn't the only plant, though, in the U.S. secretly processing high-grade nuclear materials for weapons. There were others. But the NLO had staffed this plant as part of their efforts to build their one component, which was the uranium, for the Strategic Defense Initiative, a.k.a. the weapons race in the Cold War.
Oh, man. Now you're getting political.
Right. So the other plants across the country were operating similarly, building other elements for the weapons so that they could bring them all together and put them together.
Aha.
So employees who worked at this feed plant in Fernald, Ohio, had to sign an agreement that they wouldn't discuss what they were working on at the facility, or they would be facing either a $10,000 fine or up to 5 years in prison.
Okay, so this is serious.
So it's serious. And these are blue-collar workers. Mm-hmm. No one was going to forfeit a steady paycheck for proprietary information or anything like that. They probably didn't really understand the scope of what they were doing, most of them. Some of them probably did. But one employee, Harry Easterling, said that when he started working at the plant, he, along with everyone else, was told that there was very low-level radiation in the building and it wouldn't affect his health. Everything was above board. Harry was instructed not to tell anyone what they were up to in there, and he signed the NDA like a good little boy, just like all his fellow employees mm-hmm. did. There are many places of employment that require these discretionary agreements from employees, so while he may have been like raising an eyebrow at first, he understood the guidelines and it wasn't anything nefarious to him. So in 1981, a man named Dave Box began working at the NLO at the plant as a pipe fitter, and then he worked his way up to an inspector. Dave became pals with Harry, and since they both lived about 30 miles away from the plant, they began carpooling. They both worked the graveyard shift, midnight to 8:30 a.m., so Dave and Harry would each meet up at the White Castle, which is a fast food joint, and then they'd take turns driving the rest of the way into work. June 18th, 1984, on the way into work, Harry and Dave met at White Castle, and it was Harry's turn to drive. So Dave hopped in Harry's truck, and they chit-chatted on the drive-in. Dave was super excited about this vacation that he was planning to go on to Florida with his kids, and he even showed off his new work lunchbox that he had just got. Me.
Yeah.
Like, that would be the talk of my day. I love Dave. But by all accounts, Dave was a really great guy. A guy we have all known, like a family man that goes to work and goes home, goes to church, and loves his kids. He wasn't a remarkable guy, but something would happen to Dave on this particular night that would have the world questioning. What happened to Dave Box?
Oh, no.
So David Anthony Box was born November 4th, 1944 in Staten Island, New York. he had two brothers, and the family moved to Ohio when the boys were still young. He was raised Catholic, which was what he practiced throughout his adulthood as well. But he did have a rough patch in adulthood. He married, but his years of drinking in the 70s led to a divorce from his wife, who he shared three children with. But no matter how hurt either of them were, they did a really good job of putting their kids first, and Dave remained close with his ex-wife. The children may have lived with their mom, but they could count on their dad. Anytime they needed him, they could visit him anytime. He could come by anytime. It was just, I mean, he adored his kids, and his ex-wife was very come and go as you please. And maybe Dave was a cutie back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'll post a picture of him. He was legally blind in one eye, so he wore these thick glasses. Aww. Had big ears, which his daughter Casey says that she got from her dad. he was tall and kind of stocky. He had a mustache. So he really looked, you know, with the glasses, the mustache, he really looked quintessential 80s. He was a quiet man and kept himself, but he attended church and he would lend a hand anytime they needed it. It was reported that he and actually his ex-wife, they both cut the grass at the church.
Oh,
just to help out. So he was living in Loveland, Ohio, and had just seen his children for Father's Day weekend right before he disappeared. His daughter, Casey, remembers that he dropped them off a little bit early at their mom's house because he had to work that night. So he wanted to go home, you know, get some rest before he had to work his overnight shift. Though he kept to himself, he loved chatting on the CB radio.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he used the handle Easy Rider.
Okay. Okay.
I think connecting with people over the CB radio was easier for him. It like allowed him to maybe connect with the people in ways that he didn't feel comfortable with face to face.
Kind of like these keyboard warriors out here.
Like those trolls down in their grandma's basement.
Yeah, yeah. They're more bold whenever, you know, you can't see their face.
Exactly, yes.
Not that he was hateful like that, but.
No, I think he was just looking for connection. And his daughter said that he'd go sit out in his car and chat for hours. So when Dave and his wife got a divorce, that's basically what he did all the time in his free time. So he may have been reserved, but don't take him for a pushover. I mentioned earlier that he was an inspector at the plant, and he was very vocal when it came to safety at the plant. Harry told Unsolved Mysteries that Dave would let people know if he saw something sketchy or if employees in certain plants were being exposed to anything dangerous, like to take extra safety precaution, like, hey, you're going to want to wear a mask or, you know, this careful around this pump. This one's really radioactive or whatever.
Oh, goodness.
Saying things like that. So during the night shift, the production pumps that ran during the day, like all the furnaces, they were not in operation. They weren't turned off, but they were not in operation. It was really just the maintenance crew and the security crew that were on site working the overnight shift. So fixing things from the day shift, cleaning up, etc. So Harry said that when he and Dave arrived at work that night, Dave changed into his clothes, put him in his locker, went to his toolbox, leaving it open with a lock and his keys on the top. Then they split up to go to work in their respective areas of the facility. In the next couple of hours, Harry was busy with work and hadn't really crossed paths with Dave in a while. They both worked maintenance, so they usually bumped into each other here and there. But hey, maybe Dave was, you know, rounding the corner just as he was coming around a different corner and they were just missing each other. Harry told Unsolved Mysteries that there was a safety meeting in Plant 4 that started at 7 a.m. that morning, which was an hour and a half before the men were supposed to be clocking out. So they were going to attend the safety meeting and then they could go home at the end of their shift.
Oh.
But Dave didn't show up to the safety meeting.
So weird.
Yeah. This guy, Harry, I have to say, is not your typical man because, I mean, no disrespect, but it seems like, you know, he was picking up on all these oddities and making note of them, not just brushing them off, but he really was finding these things uncomfortable. Like, oh, Dave's not here. Okay, well, maybe he's working on something and he couldn't make it. But after the meeting, he couldn't find Dave.
Yeah.
And remember, so they rode together.
Yeah, they were able to go home right after that. And now his...
Right. So Dave could have been busy, whatever, but he asked around. Nobody had seen him. And by now, he's ready to go home. Harry's like, the clock has already hit 8:30 and he's ready to go. So he's still looking around for Dave, can't find him. He goes to Dave's workstation and the keys and the lock are still sitting up on top of his toolbox like they were at the beginning of the shift.
Uh-huh.
So he's like, that's weird. Okay, so he hasn't even come back to get his keys. So Harry waits until 10:45 a.m.
Oh, no.
Over 2 hours. he waits and looks and asks around for Dave.
Oh my gosh. And what was everybody else saying? Just, I don't know. Or
yeah, people were just saying like, we haven't seen him.
Can you help me look for him?
Yeah, I don't know what he was doing in those 2 hours. He probably was walking all around the place.
Goodness gracious.
But he didn't find him. So he told the security guard, look, I've got to go home and get some sleep. So he leaves a note and it says, Dave, waited till 10:45. Finally went home. Sorry,
oh,
Harry.
Oh my goodness.
So, I mean, he had to go. What are you going to do?
Well, yeah.
So he's just hoping and praying, just telling himself that something held him up and he would get a ride back to his car. After leaving work, Harry didn't hear from Dave. Harry felt bad, you know, that he had left Dave high and dry at work. He expected to get a phone call being like, hey, sorry, man, you know, I got a ride to my car, or just some kind of explanation. But he just thought, well, maybe he's going to tell me when I see him.
Right.
Tonight,
the next day.
On the next shift.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because like when you work the night shift, it's the same day that you see the person again.
Okay.
So it truly feels like you are working all the time.
Yeah, I can imagine. And shift work like that is so hard on your sleep schedule.
It is. It rewrites your brain.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
That sleep schedule. So at when the next shift rolled around, Harry arrived at the restaurant thinking, well, we meet here all the time.
Yeah.
It's Dave's turn to drive in to work. And so he breathed a sigh of relief when he saw Dave's car.
Oh, yeah.
Sitting there at the restaurant. So he figured, well, he beat me here. He didn't see Dave in the car, but he just parked next to him and thought he's run in to get some food because this is something that he did before shifts. I mean, he'd go in and get some food or get a couple hamburgers to take with him into work and eat later. So, like I said, it was Dave's night to drive. So Harry gets out of his car, he grabs his lunchbox, and he's waiting for Dave to come back out to the car. So he sort of leaned up against Dave's car. And it took him a couple seconds to really process it. But it occurred to him that Dave's car was cool to the touch.
Oh.
He walked over to the hood and put his hand right in the middle, stone cold.
Yeah, hadn't run at all.
Right. So he's like, this car hasn't been driven recently. And it was that moment for him, I think, that given that he hadn't laid eyes on Dave since the beginning of their shift the night before, and now he's finding Dave's car still in the same spot, and now he believes it's been parked there. Since they dropped it off.
Never moved.
Harry is really worried now. He can no longer make excuses for why his reliable friend would suddenly be MIA.
Well, I'm worried now.
Yeah, exactly. So Harry gets back into his vehicle and rushes into work immediately, reporting Dave missing to the plant security guard. And an investigation begins, really starting with Harry and this security guard. So whatever searching was done the night before, whether it was casual, like, is he in here? Is, you know, Dave, are you in here? This was a little more serious.
Mm-hmm.
So you had the security guard. He cracked open Dave's locker. And I don't know if they even knew what they were looking for in there, but they were shocked to find that his street clothes were still in there from the day before.
Okay.
Same clothes he had been wearing the night before. When they went to Dave's workstation, the keys and the lock were still on top of the box.
Oh.
Like they were the night before.
What in the world?
Hadn't moved. Dave's daughter, Casey, remembers being at a racetrack with her brother and her mom's boyfriend when she heard her mom's boyfriend's name being paged over the loudspeaker. Casey told him, hey, they're calling your name. But he didn't hear it, so he just brushed it off. But when they got home from the race, her mom was waiting at the door and said, your dad is missing.
Oh my gosh.
And Casey recalls, she was younger. She wasn't an adult at the time, but she remembers thinking, her dad was an adult. So how does her dad get lost at work?
Yeah.
You know, I love how kids think so simply, but honestly.
Well, let's go find him.
We should be thinking the same thing. Like, he doesn't just get lost at work.
Yeah.
So back at the feed plant, employees were starting to learn that Dave was missing because, you know, there's this commotion. Have you seen Dave? They're looking for him. They're searching through his stuff. And so other people start joining in the search, looking in wherever. I mean, there's a million places you could look probably in a plant. After reviewing the records from the night and early morning hours that Dave was last seen, they found that his punch card showed that he had clocked in at midnight, but he never clocked out.
Right.
So they also reviewed the data from the plant's, you know, like machines and doohickeys or whatever sure. it was. And they found that at 5:15 a.m., one of the furnaces had a sudden dip in temperature, about 28 degrees, which you and I might not think is very significant, but to the plant employees, they knew that the only way that the temperature would drop is if something foreign was introduced into the molten liquid inside the furnace.
No.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Mom, can you tell me a story?
Sure. Once upon a time, a mom needed a new car.
Was she brave?
She was tired, mostly. But she went to Carvana.com and found a great car at a great price. No secret treasure map required.
Did she have to fight a dragon?
Nope. She bought it 100% online. From her bed, actually.
Was it scary?
Honey, it was as unscary as car buying could be.
Did the car have a sunroof?
It did, actually.
Okay, good story.
Car buying you'll want to tell stories about. Buy your car today on
Carvana.
Delivery fees may apply.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Plus, terms and conditions apply.
Mom, can you tell me a story?
Sure. Once upon a time, a mom needed a new car.
Was she brave?
She was tired, mostly. But she went to Carvana.com and found a great car at a great price. No secret treasure map required.
Did she have to fight a dragon?
Nope. She bought it 100% online. From her bed, actually.
Was it scary?
Honey, it was as unscary as car buying could be.
Did the car have a sunroof?
It did, actually.
Okay, good story.
Car buying you'll want to tell stories about. Buy your car today on
Carvana.
Delivery fees may apply.
Upon inspecting the furnace in question, an employee noticed something on the ledge, like a little piece of something, like rock maybe, but he really thought it looked more like bone.
No.
Whatever it was, everything taken together was enough to get the police involved at this point. The Hamilton County Police Department arrived and got the lowdown from the plant supervisor. And around 3 p.m. that afternoon, they ordered that this furnace be shut down.
Yeah.
I don't know why the plant didn't think of that. But, I mean, I kind of know. Because you can't just stop production. But.
But you can in this kind of thing.
But you kind of can. So, no one could really investigate this furnace until the contents were cooled down. I mean, this was molten liquid, like lava. It glowed red. But it would take days for the liquid to cool enough for them to do a thorough search during. Yeah. So 3 days to be exact. I don't think any of these investigators had really dealt with a situation quite like this before, where they had to sit around and wait for days just to make entry into a particular location to conduct a search due to temperature. I mean,
yeah.
So with each passing day, Dave still hadn't been heard from, which just reaffirmed everyone's horrifying belief that Dave had gone into that furnace somehow. And even though the investigators weren't experts in these types of radioactive chemicals, they knew that by the time they got to sift through the material in there, there wouldn't be much to find.
Well, yeah, you wouldn't expect.
According to, and I just found a website about cremation. So, Funerals by T.S. Warden. Okay. I'll link them in the show notes if you want to learn more. But a body would need to be placed inside a cremation furnace that's been preheated anywhere from 1400 degrees to 2000 degrees Fahrenheit.
Ooh.
And it typically takes 2 to 3 hours to render a body down. And we've talked about degradation of a body with fire in some of our other cases. And fragments of bone will be the only thing that remains if the fire is constant, tended to, and constant for hours and hours. The only reason a funeral home gives ashes to a loved one is because there's a second process with the bone and everything that remains. That, you know, if someone has like a hip replacement or something, they take all the metal out and they'll render everything down to a finer material. And I'm sorry to just talk about it in like this, like it's just cremation. But I think it's important to know that these molten salt vats at the plant were 1,300 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So nearly 1,400 degrees.
Of pure liquid at that.
Of pure liquid. And so if he had gone in and he was in there for hours.
Lord.
You just
like hours and hours.
Hours and hours. So everything but the bone belonging to Dave would have been gone. While waiting for the furnace to cool down, investigators walked the plant. They interviewed employees. They checked out Dave's locker and his toolbox. They even spoke to Dave's family. Nothing indicated to them that Dave ever left work that night, the last time he was seen. And upon speaking with one of Dave's shift mates, they discovered that in the wee hours of the morning, Dave was seen speaking with his supervisor about 4 a.m., in a parked car outside one of the plant buildings.
It's an odd place to have a meeting.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're thinking of a warehouse or even if you have ever driven behind a Target or something and you see like there's a couple random cars parked there by a loading dock or whatever.
Sure.
So this is kind of the situation. They maybe just stepped into one of these vehicles that was already sitting outside the door and had this conversation.
Okay.
The employee who saw them remembered it because he's thinking, that's strange. Like, I'm here sweating my buns off and they're sitting in a parked car with the windows up and it didn't look like it was running to him. And it looked like they were talking about something pretty serious. So anyway, and you know, like he probably was thinking, get back to work.
Yeah.
So he remembered it being a little strange. Then an hour later, the same guy sees Dave walking towards plant 4, which was their green salt plant. So an hour later at 5 a.m., the same guy sees Dave again walking towards plant 4. Dave was assigned to plant 8, and it really wasn't out of the ordinary for him to be walking around because he was in maintenance, you know, fixing things. Remember that safety meeting, though, in plant 4 was at 7. So it's not like he would have been going to the meeting at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
Because he was seen last seen way before that. So the witness shrugs it off. He's like, you know, whatever. He just observed him. And now he's telling the police. He ends up being the last person that saw Dave.
Oh, my goodness.
Detectives also learned that later that morning, after Dave was last seen alive, one of the furnace operators in Plant 6, which was the metals production plant, reported to his supervisor that there was some weird black crust floating on the top of the molten liquid that he'd never seen before in this furnace that he was working on. And there was a really strong smell that he'd never quite smelled before. Thought it was kind of weird.
Okay.
He said, hey, John. So John Sadler, another employee, walks over and he's like, get a look at this. What do you think this is? John looks at it and both men are just like, what is this? Something seeping out of a crack in the furnace. And so they called their supervisor over to report this.
Uh-huh.
And the supervisor was like, yeah, I really don't know what that is. Just get back to work.
Oh,
so,
well,
but now, given that an employee's missing and he was last seen around 5 a.m. at 5:15 a.m. There's this dip in temperature at this particular furnace.
Yeah.
All signs were pointing to something or someone had gone into the furnace in Plant 6. But why? And how?
How? Are these furnaces like something that you can easily get into, fall into?
So David Wells, a reporter with the Inquirer, explained that the furnaces were about 12 feet long, 4 feet wide, and 4 feet deep. And they were filled with this molten salt. And like I said before, it was like heated to 1350 degrees Fahrenheit. Even though the furnaces weren't operated during the night shift, they were still left on. Because if you don't keep it hot, it will cool and harden.
Okay.
Right? So the liquid will harden. They needed to keep it on constantly, which is exactly what they found days later when they shut it down, was that the liquid hardened. So searchers in full protective gear, and I read that it wasn't mostly the police searching, it was employees searching rubble. Yeah.
Well, because, you know, as secret as this place is, they probably don't want a whole lot of people in the place. But you would think as a investigator, you would need to be a part of that.
Yeah. I don't know if it was like, why don't y'all search?
Well, because they were used to the elements and
right,
all that.
And they had the protective gear. They knew how to handle this material. I'm sure there was a number of factors, but they literally had to go in and chisel and jackhammer.
Oh my gosh.
And be super careful separating the chunks and looking through all the little pieces, breaking smaller chunks into even smaller pieces and sifting through particle dust and inspecting each remnant for significance.
Wow.
They found several fragments of human bone,
what?
Which was quite concerning, but they'd already thought Dave had gone in and that he was dead. So
but here's your proof.
Yeah. So, and it wasn't like they could test the bone because it was toxic. It was radioactive.
Oh my gosh.
So they also ended up finding Dave's keys in the rubble.
What?
Okay. It's the keys for me. Okay. Listen to this. So they were able to match these keys to Dave's car. Like they actually took the keys, put it in.
Ooh.
It matched his car. Three of the keys matched padlocks that belonged to Dave. I don't know if one was on his locker, but anyway, they matched it to Dave's stuff. And the last key was like bent and damaged. So they weren't able to really verify what that key was from, but they thought it was probably his house key. But wait a minute, because Harry saw Dave's keys still on the toolbox when he came in that morning looking for Dave.
Right.
That morning. So that time of 5:15 a.m. when the temperature dropped is believed to be the time Dave goes into the furnace. So investigators presume that Dave has his keys on his person when he goes in, right?
Yeah.
But Harry says that's not possible because he saw the keys with his own two eyes hours and hours after 5:15 a.m.
Okay.
Harry said the keys must have been deposited into the furnace after Dave's body went in. After Harry arrived back at work looking for him. So when all the commotion was going on about Dave's being looked for, Harry comes in, he sees the keys, and then he goes about his business and suddenly they find the keys inside the furnace. They would have had to go in after that. But if that's true, that calls into question the authorities' main theory, which began to take shape really early on in the investigation, and that was that Dave done this to himself.
Uh-huh.
But how could that be? Because Dave, like, how could Dave get into a furnace himself?
Why?
He didn't get in and then get out and go get his keys and then go back and get in.
No, this had to be foul play. I mean,
if he had done this to himself, that means someone came along after and threw in his keys in the same furnace that nobody knew he had gone into himself.
Yeah.
Wrong again. That doesn't make sense. Someone knew he went into that particular furnace.
Yeah.
So what happened to the keys after Harry saw them laying on the toolbox? Well, Harry went to Dave's toolbox as supervisor, went with him, took the keys, locked up Dave's toolbox, and Harry never saw the keys again.
Okay. Question.
Mm-hmm.
Is this supervisor the same supervisor that he was in the car with?
Well, that's a good question, Lena. I don't know. I don't know.
Okay. I need to talk to him.
Yeah. If it was, that's pretty sus.
Right.
What did the supervisor do with the keys after? Did he take them and put them down somewhere and someone else thought, oh, I better get rid of these?
Yeah.
Very good questions. Now, in addition to the keys, investigators also found a small segment, which looked to be from a pair of eyeglasses, a piece of steel belonging to a steel-toe boot.
Oh.
And remnants from a walkie-talkie. These are all things Dave would have had on his person during the night shift when he disappeared. Something else they found in the furnace that didn't seem to fit really anything were three lengths of stainless steel wire that had been tied together in loops.
Oh, okay.
Some have speculated that those loops were bindings.
Yeah, sounds like it to me.
Made by whoever put Dave in that furnace. But police weren't convinced. They weren't finding any real motive or any suspect that wanted Dave dead.
So I'm assuming that they've talked to these supervisors. I mean, you said they were questioning everybody, right?
Yeah, they were talking to everybody. Again, when we talk about these cases, to what length?
Yeah.
To what end are they investigating? We don't know. Detectives, though, were sticking to their suicide theory.
No.
Unsolved Mysteries reported that around the time of his divorce, Dave had a suicide attempt. While I couldn't find the details of that supposed suicide attempt, there was a website called Historic Mysteries that reported the same suicide attempt. I don't know if they were getting their information from Unsolved Mysteries or what, but they also reported that Dave had a history of psychological issues, including schizophrenia, was being managed by medication at the time. I think that's why it was easy for the investigators to just go, oh, yeah. He took his own life. He did this to himself. But Dave's daughter, Casey, told Unsolved Mysteries she doesn't believe that her dad would have taken his own life. He had plans. I mean, maybe there was an attempt in the past, but nothing seemed wrong in the days, the months, the years before his death. He had just done a grocery haul for the week. He had paid his bills up. You know, he was planning a vacation with his kids. And he just bought that lunchbox.
Yeah.
And he had bought three packs of cigarettes that were still at his house.
Oh, so, and he loved his kids. He loved being a father.
Yeah,
and
he loved his kids.
I don't think he would have left. I don't know the guy, but I don't think he would have left his kids.
Yeah. Though Dave's family and friends didn't believe he was suicidal, it's something that should definitely be considered when we're trying to figure out what happened to him. In reporting for the Inquirer, David Wells explained that there was a suspended hood that spanned above the furnace. And I'll post pictures of the furnace so you can kind of get a visual. But Wells says that there was a small gap between the hood and the top of the furnace where a person could fit inside. But how Dave got in there is still the biggest mystery of all. The furnace sits on the ground and goes up. It's not like it's level with the ground. So someone would have had to climb up the side. But that doesn't seem possible because of how hot the surface of the furnace would have been.
Wow.
So there's a possibility he could have climbed up some pipes or something nearby and then lowered himself down into the furnace and chose to take his own life, but it's just not, it's not the best answer. The Accused podcast did a deep dive into this case, and I highly recommend if you want to go listen to their series on it. I'll link it in the show notes, but they tested the suicide theory that Dave might have crawled into this furnace himself. And they did this video, and I'll link it in the show notes as well, but they built this platform and had this burly guy climb up a stepladder, which again, it's not like they just had a stepladder next to these furnaces. Furnace. Furnace-i? I don't know. What's a plural? Furnace. But so he climbs up this stepladder, and he is able to, he places his feet down in the hole, and then he like lowers himself down in, but he has to kind of adjust to completely get his shoulders down in there. So it's possible that Dave could have entered the furnace. Like, if you're just talking about black and white, yes, it's possible, but it's highly improbable. That would mean Dave's feet would have been dangling in this molten liquid while he's shimmying the rest of his body through this hole.
Right.
And he would have been screaming.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe someone would have heard it. Maybe not. I mean, those plants are loud. Or Dave could have gone in head first, in which case he would have died almost immediately. But this feels like a very gruesome means of suicide and not one that I can personally buy into.
No.
Now, the other theory to explore would be accidental, but that doesn't fit at all. It's probably the thing that fits the least. So he's hovering over this small, exact location where there's this opening, and he somehow falls in. Like, that doesn't seem right.
No.
I lean towards someone did this to him. Now, a former employee of NLO, David Day, believes Dave was murdered, and he's not the only one. Many believe that Dave may have had proprietary information and was either threatening to expose the plant, or maybe just someone thought he might expose the plant. You know, he was a safety inspector, so maybe he was pushing back on some of the safety measures that he thought were being overlooked in the plant, and someone thought, we better shut him up before he takes this thing too far.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
Plant 8 was the most radioactive on the site. It released 4 times more contaminants into the air than any of their other plant in the facility. Plant 8 was where Dave was stationed regularly, and given how safety conscious he was, it's not unreasonable to think that he might have been vocal about these practices, that they were, you know, we need more safety equipment, we need this, we need that.
He was ruffling feathers.
Right. So some employees even think Dave could have possibly suffered an injury at the plant and been seeking some kind of insurance claim, but there was nothing to substantiate that either. Police pretty quickly, though, made up their mind that there was no foul play involved in Dave's death. But what kind of investigation did they really do? Like,
yeah, I don't like that.
Yeah. Melvin Carnes, a former NLO worker, said he was probably one of the last people to see Dave in the early morning hours before he went missing. His assumption is given that the time the authorities believe Dave went into the furnace and the time he saw him. Yet Melvin says no one interviewed him. No one even talked to him.
Okay, so if he wasn't interviewed, who else was?
Right.
Also, I'd like to know the people who did see him that night. Did they talk about his demeanor? Dave's demeanor?
Yeah, and so I do know that he was fine. Everything seemed fine when he was with Harry. He seemed upbeat. He seemed fine.
So
he was excited about his vacation. There was nothing to indicate that he was upset about anything. Lead investigator Pete Alderucci, I'll be really proud of myself if that was correct, said that Dave being put into the furnace by someone would have been physically impossible.
I mean, you said he was stocky.
I mean, not only so Pete told the Accused podcast when he was interviewed by them that he never even considered homicide as a possibility.
I'm so confused.
So you've got workers at the plant saying it's not possible for Dave to have done this himself. And then you got investigators saying that the only way he could have gotten in there would have been if he had done this himself. I'm gonna go with the workers that have been in and out of that facility for years, and they kind of know
the ins
what's
and outs,
what,
yeah.
what's up, what's down. I feel like they may have a better understanding of how it all works.
For sure.
Well, 5 years after Dave literally disappeared, in 1989, the NLO made headlines again when there was an accident at the plant that caused uranium dust to be released into the air.
What?
Supposedly, there was a filter and a pressure monitoring system that were not doing their jobs for 3 months. So the spokesman for the plant came out and said, well, maybe the particles escaped to the environment. Maybe they didn't.
Oh, goodness.
We couldn't know for sure. But shortly after that, the NLO was shut down because they were people in the community were getting sick. And yeah, so
okay,
it was a whole thing. I think that it's likely that only one or two people know what happened to Dave that night. Was it the supervisor that was speaking to Dave in the truck with the windows rolled up in the summer heat?
Uh-huh.
Was it the same supervisor that locked up his toolbox and took his keys and threw them into the very furnace that he had thrown Dave's body into before? No matter what theory swirled around the plant for years, everyone knew Dave could not have done that to himself, because that would have meant climbing up into the furnace, removing the cover, going in, and then putting the cover back the way it was.
Oh, wow.
With that small opening. Dave was never buried. What's left of his body were fragments of bone that were too toxic to be returned to his family for burial. They're currently being stored in a sealed drum in a radioactive facility in Nevada with other toxic materials.
Oh my gosh, that is
I can't imagine what is worse, like not having your loved one's body to lay to rest or knowing that what is left of them is too toxic to even have.
Right.
Dave was just 39 when his life was cut short. There have been reported sightings of Dave, like, oh, he's down in Mexico living his best life.
And stop.
His daughter said sometimes she just chooses to believe that. Okay. Instead. Yeah. Okay. He's in Mexico. He's having the greatest time of his life. Rather than what all of the evidence points to, which is that he died that night in a molting furnace of hot liquid.
Yeah. And knowing that someone could have done this to him and nobody's trying to find out why.
It's the bindings, like the keys and the bindings, like those wires that were looped. Like they showed.
The keys make no sense.
I know the keys. The keys is a huge thing. I remember when I was a kid seeing them do this reenactment of him being bound and lowered into this furnace, and that's what freaked me out. But they did show, I don't know if it was actual evidence or if it was just a reenactment photo of the wires, like the bindings, which I'm referring to them as bindings, which is speculatory, but it looks like hand bindings. And then they were bound, like the ankles were bound too.
Oh.
And that's how he was maybe lowered in there. We'll never know.
No.
But that is a story. The mysterious death of Dave Box.
And that was in 1984?
Yeah, 1984.
Oh, I don't like that. I don't. I want to see the police reports, like who they spoke to. I want to know if the supervisors are still alive. Like,
so there's a couple in the Accused podcast, and there's a couple other documents online that you can find, like his death investigation report. It's unremarkable. I mean, it doesn't have much on there because there's not much to say about, I mean, there wasn't a body.
Yeah.
It just talks about bone fragments, and they don't really have a date of death or cause or manner of death.
That's so frustrating.
So there's really nothing much they could have put on that.
And you know, like if, so Dave was 39, okay, let's just say 40. If most of the people there are in their 40s or 50s working there, 40 years later, they're going to be in their 80s or 90s. Or
are they, Lena?
Or not alive at all.
They were exposed to radioactive chemicals for many years.
Okay, you've got a
point. They could have all died of radiation by now.
And that's tragic because there will never be any justice in this case. And
yeah,
I can't, like you said, I can't buy into the suicide theory. I can't.
And it's not to say that people haven't taken their own lives in very gruesome ways. However, this is just so atypical of suicide. Like this would probably be the only recorded incident of someone lowering themselves, unless the vat was completely open and someone just jumped in. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a hood was covering it and there's like a small opening.
Right.
Where you'd have to shimmy, as a grown man, you'd have to shimmy your body into. It's just not feasible. It's just not, it doesn't fit.
This case reminds me a lot about the one we did, I think in March. Anyway, it was Phoebe Handjuk.
Phoebe
Handjuk.
In the trash compactor.
Right. It was, they said that she committed suicide putting herself through the trash compactor. And while that's not molten liquid, It's still.
Here's
and
the
that
thing.
That was a small opening too.
Yes, and I've heard referred to as like when people shoot themselves and they take their own life that way. That's the most important shot of their life. Right. They have to get it right.
Yeah.
Or else they could end up paralyzed, living and paralyzed.
Yeah, that's a good
but
point.
But when someone's made the decision to kill themselves, they want it done.
Right.
Then and there. So they either want to take pills and go to sleep. They want to shoot themselves in the head. They want to jump off of something and it to be instantaneous.
Yeah. And
so...
And these two cases are so similar to me, to think that they, that would be the way
right.
that they would choose. That's interesting.
Yeah. So it's, what's the most heartbreaking is that we'll probably, unless someone's made a deathbed confession, unless someone has confessed in a letter or told one of his grandkids, the likelihood of us ever knowing the truth is slim to none.
That was my point about the ages of these people. Now yeah. they're going to be 80s, 90s, or not even alive. And oh man, that breaks my heart for Dave and his family. He sounds like a really great guy.
Yeah. And
I think he's just talking on his CB, living life.
And I think he did have a rough time. And maybe he did have a really low time.
Sure.
Maybe he did have schizophrenia. I don't know.
We all get through low times.
But it just seemed like he was on the second part of his life. Yeah. He was living this, you know, he was single.
Has this interesting job.
He had a really great friendship with his ex-wife. He had his kids, had his job, and he was just living his life like a simple man.
Yeah.
And maybe he really cared too much about his job. Maybe he cared too much about the authority that was given to him. And, you know.
Goodness.
So it's really, really sad. And I hope he's resting in peace.
Yes.
And,
oh.
That someday we can learn something.
Yeah.
But I think we have enough information. We may not know who did this, but I think we have enough information to point in a direction.
Oh, yeah.
Which is that someone did this to him.
That's what's so maddening and frustrating is that they had this information then.
Yeah.
And they couldn't see that there was something to it.
I know.
Yeah, thank you for telling me of this case and about Dave. I never heard it. And, you know, unsolved mysteries, leave it to unsolved mysteries.
Robert Stack.
I mean, that is why we are the way we are.
It is. Know? And my parents, both are like, I just don't know why you're the way you are. And I'm like, you both.
Unsolved
my
mysteries.
Dad would watch Rescue 911 and yeah. my mom was watching Dateline and Unsolved Mysteries. So I don't want to hear it, Brenda and Alan.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, I said your names.
I know. The first part of the music that comes on the TV and you're like, oh, I got to make it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you go flying into the room.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what reminded me is I was watching, you know, the old Unsolved Mysteries, and I came across this episode and I said, and I had a traumatic like memory from when I was a kid and I saw this guy being lowered down into the, and I was like, I remember this story about this guy disappearing at work.
Ugh.
And I was like, I've got to.
And we still don't know. We still don't know.
And I still can't tell you what happened.
Oh, I hate that for his family. And I hope that they've found some kind of peace in life.
I'm with his daughter. Like, let's just think of him in Mexico. He's got a new
sitting on
cute
the beach.
Girlfriend. He's still 39.
Yeah.
Looking smoking hot with that with that mustache and those glasses and, you know,
aww.
He's living his life.
Yeah. Ooh, well, that was great. Let's do it again sometime.
Let's do it. See you next time, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Cousins on Crime. If you're enjoying the show, please rate and review wherever you listen, and consider joining our Patreon for bonus episodes every month.
Follow us on Instagram and Facebook for case photos and to stay up to date with the latest C-on-C news. If you have a case suggestion or just want to tell us how cool we are, email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi everybody, it's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.